Hi, everybody. I'm John Kiriakou, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Focus Q&A, my favorite part of the show. But as always, before we get started, I want to thank you for your confidence in the show, for subscribing, for liking, for sharing, telling your friends and family, and making your comments. And please keep them coming. So today we've got a whole new set of questions. I'm going to start with Jason Walton. Jason says, hey, John, huge fan of your media and very thankful as an American for the patriot you are. Thank you. In your own opinion, how likely is it that Israel uses a nuclear weapon? And would that be the final straw where the U.S. government grows a backbone and goes against them? Wishing you the best. God bless. Man, this is a really tough question. A couple of weeks ago, and I may have mentioned this in the last Q&A. Maybe I didn't. I don't recall. But I got together for dinner with a group of people that meets every couple of months. It's four or five professors, a newspaper editor, the former NPR Washington bureau chief. And it's like an old-fashioned salon where we sit and talk about the issues of the day. It's all off the record, and people can speak freely. One of the people who attended this last dinner has been following these issues for 50 years and really knows what he's talking about. He believes that the Israelis are indeed prepared to use a nuclear weapon against Iran. The Samson policy is real, and that if the Israelis feel that they are truly threatened, that the existence of the state of Israel is threatened, they will take down everybody else around them, beginning with Iran. But I'll tell you where he disagrees with you. He believes that Israel would use a nuclear weapon with the support of the United States. He said that his analysis is that Donald Trump views nuclear weapons as the final taboo in warfare, and that Trump wants to break that taboo so that future presidents have the ability to use nuclear weapons against our enemies. I have chills just even speaking the words. The United States is the only country in the history of the planet that has used a nuclear weapon, and we've done it twice. So I'm deeply concerned that this is even being discussed. And perhaps that's why the two sides at least are making noises indicating that they might be willing to get together to talk about an off-ramp. But for me personally, do I believe that Israel would use a nuclear weapon? Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. I don't want to believe. My brain can't wrap itself around the notion that the United States would support the use of nuclear weapons. I think it would be just a disaster of historic, epic proportions. So fingers crossed that cooler heads prevail. Mark McCars, thank you for the 1199 euros. Hey, John, I'm a Turk from West Thrace, Thraki, in Greece. I have some questions. When you were in Athens, did you get to know anything of the Greek intelligence? Whether Greek intelligence has concern about the minorities in West Thrace, especially in times like the Cyprus War, the death of Dr. Sadek Ahmed in an accident. Also, I think it is an old rumor or conspiracy theory that Greece has hidden a prison near its border with Turkey to arrest West Thracian Turks that are serving in the military. Could you imagine that it's like that? I don't think the Greek government has any interest in this region except EU border control and security. When I travel through mainland Greece, it feels like the region after Thessaloniki and Kavala is a no man's land. The infrastructure is bad, and more people are leaving, especially young people. The relationship between Greeks and Turks is actually really good in the region. You have a lot of friends around the world. I wonder if you have some Turks as your friends. Keep up the good work. That's an easy question. Yes, I do. I'm very proud to say I do have Turkish friends, not just here in the United States, but in Turkey as well. Thank you for these excellent, excellent questions. So let me take them one at a time. when I was in Athens, did I know anything about the Greek intelligence service and whether it had concerns about minorities in Western Thrace? They did not have concerns about minorities in Western Thrace. You know, it's the politicians that are the problem between Greece and Turkey. First of all, people of Turkish ethnicity in Western Thrace are called Turkish-speaking Greeks by the Greek government, and they're called ethnic Turks by the Turkish government. I think they should be called whatever they want to be called. Does it really matter to governments whether you call yourself a Turkish-speaking Greek or a minority Turk? Makes no difference to me. I think you should decide what you want to be called. But in terms of the intelligence service, no. Literally never came up a single time. Even in times of trouble, like the war in Cyprus, the standoff over EMEA, the Western Thracian ethnic Turks, it just never came up. And I was at the Greek intelligence service literally every single day. You say that there's this old rumor, conspiracy theory that Greece has a hidden prison near its border. Not in my experience. I think that's really all it is a conspiracy theory. Certainly no Greek official ever mentioned it to me or to anybody else at the American embassy. And it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, the 1967 to 1974 military junta was such a trauma to Greece as a nation. Just the idea of a secret prison like the military junta had between 1967 and 74 is just so anathema, Greek word, anathema to what Greece is today. I can't imagine such a thing could possibly exist. Mainland Greece, buddy, I have to agree with you. Thessaloniki is one of Europe's great cities. Kavala is a terrific place. Outside of Thessaloniki and Kavala, especially in the center of Greece, as you move west, it's a no man's land. It needs to be developed. The infrastructure is terrible. And you are exactly right that young people are leaving. They're going to Germany and the Netherlands and Belgium, London, Canada, the US, Australia. Greece is losing its population, especially of young, educated people, to the point where it is going to eventually threaten the viability of the country as a legitimate country. I agree with you that the relationship between Greeks and Turks on a person-to-person level, and especially in Thraki, is very solid. So thank you for those excellent questions. Bugs and Clowns, thank you for the $4.99. Bugs and Clowns says, hi, John, I have two questions. Number one, do you think there's a chance that Netanyahu is dead, especially with the AI video that came out from Israel? I don't think he's dead. You know, of course there's a chance, but I think we would have heard something. Look, Donald Trump can't keep his mouth shut. I think Trump would have let something slip, but I do think that Netanyahu is in hiding. There were rumors that he was in Germany at the start of the war. There were rumors that he was hiding in Cyprus later on, you know, after a couple of weeks. He will give press conferences that don't appear to be AI. A lot of them do, but there have been some that appear to be legit, where he's simply surrounded by Israeli flags. That's in a bunker, clearly, but that bunker could be anywhere on the planet. I don't believe he's dead, but I believe he's hiding, which also says a lot about Benjamin Netanyahu. Number two, Bugs and Clown says, I live in Hawaii. Should I be worried about Iran targeting Pearl Harbor? There's lots of panic surrounding this topic out here. Thank you for all you do and good luck on your pardon. Your videos make my day. Thank you. P.S. Will you ever come to Hawaii? Totally, definitely, yes. Especially when my sister and her husband buy a condo in Honolulu, which is on the table. I know a lot of people in Oahu would love to hear a talk from you. Oh, that I would love to do that. You know what? I hadn't thought of that. I'm going to talk to my agent. You'd be surprised how many students here want to go into intelligence. I do not think Iran will attack Pearl Harbor. First of all, they don't have the ability. We hear about these Iranian cells. There are no Iranian cells in the United States. There never have been. There are Iranian cells in Canada and here and there elsewhere around the world, but especially in places like Pakistan, India, maybe the Philippines, not in the United States, and not Pearl Harbor. That would be a symbolic attack. And, you know, the Arabs might want to do a symbolic attack. In Arab cultures, symbolism is very important. The Iranians, no way. If they want to do an attack, they're gonna try to kill as many people as possible. Not that they're planning to do that. I don't believe that they are. I don't believe that there's any Iranian presence in Hawaii at all. So don't worry. And thanks for the idea on a speech in Oahu. I'm going to have to do that. Grim Reaper, thank you for the very generous $50. Grim Reaper says, hey, John, I am a huge fan and hope you get your pardon and your pension back. Thank you very much. I have three questions for you. With your rise in popularity, are you concerned for the safety of you and your family from bad actors in the government or powers that be? What book of yours would you recommend I read first? What are some things you are monitoring in geopolitics that aren't making headlines these days? Ooh, that third one's a tough one. Give me a second to think about it. So first of all, thank you very much. With my rise in popularity, which has come like literally overnight in the last 4 weeks, I'm more worried about individual crazy people for a couple of reasons. First, odd as it may sound, I get regular death threats. I will fill you in on one. A guy called me at 3 o'clock in the morning, obviously drunk, making direct threats to kill me. This fucking idiot, excuse my language, used his own cell phone. As soon as I woke up, I keep my ringer off all the time. So it didn't wake me up or anything. But when I saw the voicemail, I listened to the voicemail and I was like, oh, really? Really? Okay. So I came downstairs. I went to binverified.com, have a subscription there, put the guy's number in, and boom, it popped right up. His name, his address, his whole history. So I texted him. And I said, Dave, you fucking moron. You have the balls to call me and threaten my life? What's your problem? I said, don't ever do it again. Because if you do, you're going to have to expect it when you least expect it. And I hit send. And he answered. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was drunk last night and I was watching your videos and I didn't realize what I was doing. I am so sorry. And I texted him and I said, if you're not going to deal with me next time, you're going to deal with the FBI. Don't let there be a next time. He's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Most people are just nuts. They'll tell me, they'll write to me and say that, you know, the CIA planted a chip in their head, or the CIA is communicating with them through a filling in their tooth. Seriously. Or, you know, the CIA tried to kill them 6 times this year. And I'm like, buddy, if the CIA wanted you dead, you'd be in the ground. They're not going to miss 6 times. It's your imagination. And some people are so like in my face. I have to say, as calmly as possible, I suggest you seek immediate psychiatric intervention, which just pisses them off more. So most of the time, I just ignore them. Sometimes they're so provocative, I feel like I have to respond. I'm worried enough about them that I now wear a bulletproof vest under my suit when I give speeches. I felt that after Charlie Kirk and a couple friends, you know, have expressed concern, I thought that it was money well spent. It's very thin. It's a bulletproof and stab proof, you know, level 3B vest. So I feel confident wearing it. But better safe than sorry. I'm not worried about the government in this administration. I would be very much worried about the government if the likes of Barack Obama and his cronies came back into power. Yeah, That would worry me. And what book of mine would I recommend that you read first? You know, I really think for the full background, The Reluctant Spy was probably the best. That was my first one, but it's out of print, and it's people are charging like $500 for it on eBay. It's ridiculous. I wish I had more. I'd just send them out to people. I used to give them out for free, but they don't exist anymore. I think the best book I've ever written is the second one, Doing Time Like a Spy. That one actually won 2 literary awards. You might want to check that one out. And what are some of the things that I'm monitoring in geopolitics that aren't making headlines? There's an ongoing war, a hot war, between Pakistan and Afghanistan right now that is resulting in just enormous civilian casualties that nobody is paying attention to. Nobody. That's one. 2, I am very, very worried about what the Trump administration is going to do in Cuba. Very worried. And I'm worried about the re-rise of the neocons here in the United States. I don't think that Marco Rubio is good for this country. I think that he and Lindsey Graham are 2 peas in a pod, that they are perfectly happy to get us into wars all over the world. I think it's bad for the American people. I think it's bad for the U.S. economy. It's bad for our relationships with just about every other country in the world. We can't just wantonly invade and overthrow countries whose politics we don't like. We've gotten ourselves in too much trouble over the years. It's easy to invade a country. It's easy to overthrow its leaders and kill them. It's really, really hard to get out. And we're just going to see more and more American dead in these wars. There's no upside to it. Thank you for those excellent questions. I want to take a break and bring you a message from one of our sponsors. What if one signature from President Trump could create more American millionaires than any event in modern history? It's not fantasy. It's happened before. In 1934, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed an executive order that revalued gold literally overnight. It transferred billions of dollars in wealth with a single stroke of a pen. President Trump has the same legal authority, and he's been hinting at using it. Here's why it matters to you. There's a massive gap between what the government says its gold is worth and what gold actually trades for today. We're talking a difference of more than $1 trillion. That gap has to close eventually. When it does, gold prices could explode, but only people positioned beforehand will benefit. Central banks already see this coming, and they've been buying gold at record levels for the past 3 years straight. I've partnered with American Alternative Assets to release a free report called The Great Gold Reset. It explains exactly what's happening and how to position your retirement before the window closes. So go to johnlovesgold.com to get your free copy. That is johnlovesgold.com. Or you can call 888-GOLD-053 and they'll mail one to you. I'm Dotsum. Thank you very much for the $25. I'm Dotsum says, hey, John, I have 2 questions. I consume a lot of geopolitical content and it makes me a bit pessimistic. Me too, unfortunately, about saving money, traveling the world, and the future of our country. So do you have any advice on how to navigate the future world we're walking into? Second question is, have you seen any of Professor Jiang's content? Very interesting stuff. Thank you in advance. Thank you for your stories and thank you for being you. I got my fingers crossed for you to get that pardon. Thank you very much. Yeah, this is a tough one. I am an inveterate world traveler. I got the travel bug when I was 19 years old and I haven't been able to quench it ever since. I've been bragging for ages on podcasts that I've been to 72 countries. Day before yesterday, I went to my 73rd. I was just 2.5 hours by train from Poland. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to Poland and see what they have. And it was a pretty great place. This summer, my podcast colleague, Ted Rall, and I plan to go with our partners to Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan. Why? Only because we've never been there. His girlfriend speaks Russian. My girlfriend speaks Farsi. So we figured they could do the translating for us. But I'd like to add those four countries. And I'm going to give a speech in Vietnam on August the 10th. So I'm adding a bunch more countries. With that said, I'm genuinely worried about it for a bunch of reasons. I'm worried about where this war in Iran is going to go. I'm worried if we're going to be sucked into something that we never expected, never intended. I don't trust the Israelis. And what happens if this becomes a longer term war? We have bases in a lot of these countries. Are we going to start using those bases? Are we going to commit ground troops? And if we do, does that draw other countries in? What's the response going to be from the Russians or from the Chinese? I just don't trust anything that I'm seeing right now. I'm genuinely worried about it. Now, I would say don't not travel. Continue to travel. Continue to do whatever you want to do, but be aware of your surroundings. Avoid crowds. Avoid places where Americans congregate or more generally Westerners congregate. Frankly, I would avoid the Persian Gulf right now, either side of it. I was supposed to go to Dubai every month for a week for the next 9 months. That's been put on indefinite hold. The airspace is closed. Half the time, the airports are closed, not just in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but in Manama, Bahrain, and in Kuwait. Now, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia is here in Washington this morning, and he publicly said that he wants the United States to continue fighting and to destroy Iran. So on the one hand, we're hearing about the president engaging with the Iranians towards some sort of an off-ramp, and the Saudis saying, no, we want you to kill them all. You know, I know that hope is not a strategy, but we've got to hope for the best and continue living our own lives. Professor Jiang, you know, I had never heard of Professor Jiang until about 3 weeks ago. So I started watching his podcast and his content. This guy is very, very bright, very insightful. And I would recommend that people check him out. I think he speaks a lot of truth, and I'm liking the stuff so far. Thanks for that. Gandalf the Wise, thank you so much for the 500. I'm not sure what ARS stands for. Oh, Argentine Reals, thank you so much. Thank you for that. Hey, John, have you ever been to Argentina? Tell me a story related to Argentina. Love your channel. I spent my second honeymoon in Argentina. I was there for 3 weeks, and oh my God, did I fall in love with the place. Where do you even begin? We started off in Buenos Aires. And you know, if you had just dropped me in the center of Buenos Aires and said, look around you and tell me where you think you are, I would have looked around and I would have said, Italy, maybe France. It is so European and so cultured. It's so wonderful. There's so much to do, so many places to see. So after a week in Buenos Aires, we went to Iguazu in the north on the tri-border with Brazil and Paraguay. And the waterfalls there, that was probably the single most beautiful natural phenomenon I've ever seen in my life. I saw a black panther just walking down the path. Toucans and all the trees. I've never seen anything like it before. You got to watch out for the giant snakes. But I saw an aardvark. Where in the world are you going to see an aardvark just walking down the street? Well, not a street, but you get my idea. And then we went to Ushuaia, the southernmost inhabited place on Earth. We went in August, which was the dead of winter. The sun never came up. But oh my God, the best seafood I've ever had in my life. We took a dog sled up, you know, one of the Andes, and then we got on a steamer and we went to Antarctica. It was the craziest trip I've ever had. But I'll tell you what one of the highlights was. The architecture in Buenos Aires is so stunning that we were standing outside the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, my wife and I, taking a picture. And we were commenting on the architecture. And this man walked up to us, a man in a suit, and he said, "Are you tourists?" And we said, "Yes, we're on our honeymoon." And we were just struck at the beauty of the architecture of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And he says, "Ah, yes." He said, "This building has housed the Ministry of Foreign Affairs since 1887 or 1888, whatever it was. And it's built in the, you know, proto Bauhaus style." And he gave us this whole like architectural briefing. While he's standing there telling us about the building, people were coming up to him and saying hello and shaking his hand. "It's so nice to see you. How are you? Nice to see you." So I said to him, "Excuse me for my ignorance, but you're obviously somebody. Who are you?" And he said, he says, "I'm the Minister of Foreign Affairs. I went out to lunch. I saw you take the picture and I thought they must be tourists. So I came over to say hello." What other country in the world is that going to happen in? He could not have been any friendlier. He gave us a true architecture lesson on this gorgeous building. And that was just emblematic of how lovely the Argentine people are. And besides all that, it's some of the best food in the world. I mean, the beef is legendary. Literally the first thing we did before we even checked into the hotel, we went to a steakhouse. I'll warn you in advance, they eat literally everything, every part of the cow. I couldn't, but oh my God, the quality of the food there, it's ridiculous. And then we did the tourist thing and we went to see Evita in one of the theaters. And then we went to see Zorba the Greek in Spanish. I couldn't understand a single word, but the music was all Greek, written by Mikis Theodorakis, my favorite composer. And, you know, I just have to say, even though my marriage didn't last, my beautiful memories of Argentina certainly did. G-Rod, thank you for the $20, G-Rod. G-Rod says, "Hi, John, I hope you're doing well. Do you have any tips on protecting yourself from targeting by proxy, documenting surveillance, and pinpointing who might be behind your surveillance? Also, best wishes on your pardon and pension." Yeah, I do. I wrote a book back in 2017 called The CIA Insider's Guide to Surveillance and Surveillance Detection. And I get into some of these tech issues. I would also recommend you check out a website called ivycyber.com, ivycyber.com. It's created by a friend of mine, Sean O'Brien. Sean is a professor of cyber law at Yale University Law School, and he's the founder of the Yale Privacy Lab. He can walk you through all this stuff step by step by step. I think it's important to know that on kind of a broad scale, we're all under surveillance, you know, certainly electronically. Actually, Sean just sent me a phone. I just got it yesterday. It's just a run-of-the-mill Galaxy, you know, Samsung Galaxy. You can get them in any store. They're at Target, they're at Walmart, they're everywhere. But he loaded it with some software that he wrote called Privacy Safe. So I can take it overseas and it encrypts literally everything. It's got a kill button. So if I get stopped by, I guess ICE is in the airports now as of today, or stopped by anybody else, or stopped by a hostile intelligence service, or stopped by the FBI or whatever, I mean, this thing is as good as a paperweight. They're not getting anything from it. So check out ivycyber.com. And my book, I think I'm pretty sure it's still in print. You know what? Even if it's not, it's going into reprint with a foreword by Tucker Carlson in the next month or so. So thanks for that question. Dumplino's Bricks, thank you for the $5. Dumplino's says, "Hey, John, hope you're having a good day. I wanted to ask what you know or your opinions on MACVSOG during the Vietnam War, and have you met anyone associated with them? I love studying the Vietnam War and specifically Special Forces. Love your videos and thanks for everything." You know, MacVSOG was one of those controversial organizations. There were so many of them during the Vietnam War. Were they CIA? Probably. I can tell you that when I was at the CIA, there were some celebrations of the various CIA components that were active during the Vietnam War. I do not recall MacVSOG being one of them. And I wondered at the time if that was because maybe that was something that we wanted to forget. I don't know. There was a lot of bad juju coming out of CIA activities in Vietnam, like a lot of heroin coming in. So I don't know, to tell you the truth. I've never met anyone associated with them. And honestly, I don't even know if they're the good guys or the bad guys. I would like to bring you a message from our second generous sponsor. If there is one thing we've learned over the last few years, it is that access to medication can change quickly depending on politics, regulation, and corporate influence. That is why it's important to have a pharmacy that focuses on access and transparency, not bureaucracy. This is the reason why people are turning to All Family Pharmacy. Instead of scheduling doctor visits, sitting in waiting rooms, and dealing with insurance approvals, the entire process is handled online. You choose the medications that you need on their website. You fill out a short medical form and a licensed doctor reviews your request. If it's appropriate, they will provide the prescription. Then your order ships directly to your door. It is a simple way to keep essential medications on hand like antibiotics, antivirals, Tamiflu, ivermectin, mebendazole, NAD+, and more than 400 other prescription medications that people rely on every single day. Prepare now before you need it in the future. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/John and use promo code John10, John and the number 10, to save 10% on your next order. Seaballer, thank you for the very generous $50. Seaballer says, hi, John. You've said many times that you were willing to work for the CIA and put your life on the line because you truly believe that we, the US, were the good guys. Do you still believe we're the good guys? Other than perhaps some small countries like the Nordics, are there any good guys left in the international community? You know what? Let's just call a spade here. No, I don't believe that we're the good guys. I believe that we believe we're the good guys. I believe that our politicians believe we're the good guys because they have that simple black and white view of the world. But after what I saw at the CIA, a torture program, a secret prison program, an international rendition that's kidnapping program, no, I don't believe we're the good guys. When we just wantonly overthrow governments, we're not the good guys. When we support a genocide against civilians in Gaza, we're not the good guys. When we wantonly just snatch the presidents of foreign countries and then offhandedly mention that a neighboring country is next. We're coming for you next. We're not the good guys. And then your second question, other than some small countries like the Nordics, are there any good guys? There might be a couple. I think Greece is one of the good guys, kinda. I think it's kind of slipping away from the good guy position by allying itself with Israel for money. I could tell you there are a handful of countries that I've been to that I thought, wow, they really are doing it right here. The Swiss are pretty good. I went to Uruguay one time. It's like paradise down there. The Uruguayans are pretty great. Chile is pretty great. You know, the Canadians do their best, but sometimes screw things up, but they're pretty good. I don't know. Are there other good guys? Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Septile, thank you for the 15 Australian dollars. Hi, John. When mentioning good intelligence agencies, you speak a lot about the Chinese, Russians, and Israelis. What are the Indians like? Are they skilled? What are their strengths? And have you ever had to work with them in your time at the CIA in non-terrorism stuff? To me, they rarely get mentioned, but they are a rare case of a superpower with multiple primary adversaries, active conflicts with China and Pakistan, plus balancing friendships with both the USA and Russia. I don't know how they do it. You know what? That is a really good analysis of the Indian intelligence services. Very good analysis. I worked with the Indians a couple of times, not much, and almost really incidentally. I will say that I agree with you. They are very good, but they're also very preoccupied. They're preoccupied with China. They're preoccupied with Pakistan. They do try to balance friendships with the United States and Russia, but that's done on more of a macro level between the actual leaderships of the US and India. The Indians are very, very concerned about terrorism, as you would expect them to be. They're concerned about stability in Sri Lanka. They're concerned about stability in Bangladesh. They're concerned about stability in Afghanistan. And, you know, they're always worried about being sucked into a conflict over Kashmir or into a conflict with Pakistan over Afghanistan. It's funny because Pakistan created the Taliban, but the Taliban are allied with India. It's just one of those weird things that worked out in a way that nobody expected it to work out. So yeah, the Indians are good, but they are provincial. They have to be. And they're worried about hot wars. Thanks for that great question. Well, folks, thank you so much for these continuing questions. And again, thank you for liking, subscribing, sharing, commenting, and all the other stuff that you do. We're only able to do this podcast because of you. It means a lot to me. Thanks again.